This is episode number 274 of the Fearless Presentations podcast, the fastest, easiest way to eliminate public speaking fear.
Want to absolutely eliminate public speaking fear? This podcast is the answer. Here's the guy who literally wrote the book on Fearless Presentations, Doug Stannard.
Hey, welcome to Fearless Presentations. I'm your host, Doug Stannard, and my goal is to help you become a fearless and confident speaker and presenter. So just as an FYI, the last few weeks I've been traveling around delivering a series of in-person training sessions really all over the world, but a lot of them have been up in the northeast portion of the United States. In a lot of the big cities, New York, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, places like that. And one of the things I've kind of noticed when I've been doing sessions in those cities is that inevitably, as I start to begin the session or begin the in-person training, one of my clients will turn on a Teams meeting or a Zoom meeting as I'm kind of setting up. And what I kind of notice is that in many of these cities, coming into the office is still somewhat optional. So these poor meeting organizers are trying to include virtual team members into their training sessions, the in-person training sessions that we're doing. So this week, I wanted to kind of spend a little bit more time going back and reviewing a few of the tips that we came up with during the pandemic that help make instructor-led virtual training sessions way more interactive and way more meaningful. And then next week, I'm going to show you how to organize a hybrid meeting where some of the people are going to be in person and some of the people are going to be virtual. By the way, the episode is sponsored by fearlesspresentations.com. So if you're looking for a faster way to reduce public speaking fear or become a more persuasive speaker, we've got two-day public speaking classes coming up in cities like Minneapolis, Miami, Columbus, Houston, Kansas City, San Diego, Nashville, San Francisco, Charlotte, New York, Sacramento, Chicago, Phoenix, and then our last class for the year is going to be in Las Vegas. So for details about any of those classes, just go to fearlesspresentations.com. By the way, our YouTube channel has hundreds of short videos and tips with tricks on how to become a better speaker and presenter. To access those videos, just go to YouTube and do a search for Fearless Presentations, or the channel name is at Fearless Presentations Online. By the way, you can chat with me in the comments on the YouTube channel, or you can also go to any of our social media platforms. My handle on Twitter, or the social media platform formerly known as Twitter, X, my handle there is at FP Class. So like Fearless Presentations, at FP Class. So I look forward to chatting with you. So let's get on with today's session. So before I get started with today's kind of topic, one of the things I want to kind of cover is about what virtual instructor-led training is and how it's really here to stay. If you do this well, this could be a very effective way to train people or to get everybody kind of up to speed on a new topic or to reinforce skills that they already have. The challenge, I think, is that during the pandemic, it was the only thing that we could do. And so everybody was really trying to make their virtual-led training much more effective. And then post-pandemic, especially in a lot of the smaller big cities, especially in the southern states, people were so resistant to doing any more Zoom calls. Oh my God, I am so over Zoom call. I don't want to do anything virtual ever again. It's kind of made it to where the folks that you would invite to one of these things are going to be more resistant to it. And people have kind of started to tune out. It's much more difficult to make sure everybody kind of keeps their cameras on and interacts and that kind of thing. So basically on this session, I'm going to cover a few of the tips that we've come up with that help make this type of training session more effective. And then next week, I'm going to cover how to do something more in a hybrid way where you've got most of your people are probably back in the office and they're in a meeting room. But you may have one or two or three or 10 different people that are also coming to the meeting, but they're virtual, and how to get them involved in the training sessions as well. So we'll kind of talk about that next week though. So trainers who embrace the virtual platforms and really adapt to the best practices have a strategic advantage over those types of trainers who don't do that. So I thought it might be a good idea just to kind of go back and review some of those virtual instructor-led training best practices. So basically, in this session, I'm going to cover a few tools and tips really to for that specific type of training. In addition, I'm going to start with exactly what this type of training is. What is virtual instructor-led training? Because it's kind of a weird way of kind of putting the term, and we'll kind of show you how that actually works. So let's kind of start with the definition. What is it? So to some of you, this seems really, really obvious. However, there's a little confusion because people use different words and phrases to describe various online training types. So so let me kind of get rid of some of that kind of confusion here. So here are a few of the types of training along with synonyms that people use to describe them, right? So we got first is the virtual instructor-led training. That's what we're talking about here today. These are training sessions that are delivered live via a virtual meeting platform like Zoom or Microsoft Teams or GoToMeeting or one of those other types of things. There is also the term online training, which people will sometimes use as a synonym to the virtual instructor-led training, but online training sessions are typically pre-recorded sessions that can be accessed on demand. And then the other type of phrase that people use is kind of a live webinar. And webinars can be live and they can also be instructor-led. However, they're typically kind of a one-sided delivery. Most often, when you are viewing a webinar, the audience really isn't a part of that process. So as a result, they're kind of a hybrid between those first two types. By the way, the tools and tips that I'll cover also work well for online training and webinar training as well. But the main reason why I kind of covered those different definitions is because before you start to design your training session, you have to really understand the difference between the different types of delivery methods. For instance, if a viewer can watch the video replay of your live session and get the same type of result, you're probably missing out on some of the main value of having a live session. The key difference is the interaction with the audience. So if you're delivering a monologue to a live audience, you may as well just basically record it and then deliver it to them that way, because it's not really going to help. So I would encourage you to make a few adjustments based on what we're going to talk about here. The main thing that you want to kind of keep in mind about any of these virtual sessions is that you want to make them shorter than a normal in-person session, and you want to make them more what I call focused. If you want to see your team members kind of roll their eyes, use these words in a meeting. Hey, we're going to be doing an 8-hour Zoom training session on Monday. And you'll likely hear a few groans as you kind of mention that. So one of the major benefits of live interactive sessions is that the instructor can break up the training into bite-sized pieces. And that's a much better way to develop a skill, by the way. So often when we're doing in-person meetings, since it's so costly to get a group together, we want to kind of jam as much content into the session as possible. And by the way, that's a terrible way to conduct in-person training sessions, but that's kind of beside the point. But when we're scheduling virtual training, though, the cost to get the group together is removed from the equation. So it basically makes this type of training way more economical, and in some cases, even better than doing in-person sessions. So I'll give you an example. So let's say that a company invests in a new piece of software that will be used in 50 different offices worldwide. So if you have to book travel for 50 different people to go out to 50 different offices, you want to make sure that you only have to do that once. However, the odds that each one of those people will be an expert at using that software after just a couple of days is really kind of unlikely. So with virtual delivery, you can conduct a single hour with an overview of the software and then give the participants time to kind of experiment with the software. And then a couple of days later, you can get the group back together and meet again and cover a few specific components of the software. Then the participants could have time to master each of those components before returning for additional training later. Since people learn by doing, they're going to learn the process much faster this way than they would even if we did in-person instructor-led training. So the other major thing that you want to do is include discussions to make sure that the delivery is interactive. So one of the major benefits of a virtual instructor-led training is that a good instructor anyway can make the session very interactive. So a big mistake that a lot of trainers make is that they focus too much on what they are going to say. So while they do this, by the way, they disregard the interaction with the group. So for example, let's say that a man asks a woman out on a date, and then the man spends the entire dinner talking about himself, never allowing his date to say anything. I mean, do you think he's going to get a second date? Well, kind of think that's a good analogy to kind of use with training sessions. If it's just a talking head getting up and speaking with no interaction from the rest of the group, you're probably not going to get the second date with that group anyway. So for virtual training instructors, in a sense, we're basically on a first date with our participants. So the more that the instructor talks in a monologue format, the less the group is going to really like it. So I suggest that instructors add discussion throughout the entire session, especially the very first time that you do some type of training with a group. So some of you listening right now may be thinking, well, Doug, that's easier said than done, though. And so to help, I'm going to cover a few tips later on and to help you get better feedback when you're interacting with people, especially online, which can be a little bit trickier. So I'll show you some of my tips and tricks to kind of help with that. By the way, I'm going to include a link in the show notes to a post that we did on a previous podcast about how to add audience participation to your presentation, because it's 9 really, really, really effective ways to get people to interact with you. And on that session, we go into great detail about each one of those. So I'll link to that in the show notes. The other thing that you want to do is make sure to give tangible takeaways to the participants. The best training sessions deliver tangible results for the people who are taking their time to come to this session. So if I'm going to be on a Zoom meeting, I want to make sure that my time is going to be well spent. So meeting planners often focus on audience satisfaction to determine the value of the training. And yeah, I mean, it's okay if that's what you're focusing on, but in my mind, it's a mistake, because at least if it's not a mistake, it's probably an improper focus on what you should be trying to gather from that meeting. What we really want to do is, we want the audience to enjoy the training. However, if the training doesn't really add any value to the participants, then it's really a waste of everybody's time. So of course, if you include both, if you make the interaction, session way entertaining and fun, and you also give them tangible things that they can use, now you've kind of really hit a home run. And that's what you want to do with using the tips that we'll give you in the last part of the session here. So one of the things that I like to do is ask myself, what result does my audience need to receive from this training? Before I do anything, what is the result? What do I want these people to be able to do at the end of this session before I start writing anything, before I put any PowerPoint slideshow together, before I deliver any type of virtual or in-person session for that meeting? So I want to be very, very clear about the tangible result that I want the people in the audience to get, or that the people in the audience need to get from my session before I create any type of content for it. And then design the content to make sure that the audience receives that result. So for instance, when we created the virtual version of the Fearless Presentations class, we were a little hesitant. And the reason why we were is because we had spent a couple of decades by that time building a brand on how to reduce public speaking fear. And folks knew that if they came to a Fearless Presentations class, we would help them reduce and in some cases eliminate their nervousness entirely. So we had to make sure that if someone attended the virtual version of the class, that they also got a similar result. So we reduced the number of attendees. So instead of having, 10 to 12, like we do in our in-person sessions, we typically limited the first couple anyway to about 4 to 6. And in addition, we also added more practice time for each participant. So far, the results that we had, by the way, when we started doing these things, were fantastic. And in fact, as an instructor myself, I find that people who have attended the virtual classes are actually, in some cases, getting better results than what we were even receiving in the in-person meetings, because the feedbacks that, and that's basically just from the feedback that we're getting from the participants. Every person that went through that virtual session got more interaction with the specific instructor, more one-on-one kind of coaching because of the way that the class was delivered. So it doesn't, if you're kind of moving from in-person to virtual or vice versa, you can do similar things, but you'll have to make adaptations each way. And some of the adaptations that you'll need to make are some of the things that we'll talk about in the next 4 or 5 minutes or so. All right. So let's give you the really quick tools and tips that will help you do this specific type of training much, much, much better. The closer you stick to these guidelines, by the way, the better your training is, your training sessions are going to be. Just as an FYI, though, these are tools and tips for virtual training sessions, right? So if you're organizing a virtual staff meeting, or you just need to get your entire team on the same page, there's lots of tips for that as well. But the one major tip is just to keep the virtual meetings really, really short. Virtual staff meetings should take 15 to 30 minutes max. The moment that you cross that 30-minute mark, retention and morale are going to drop exponentially. So with that being said, if you're teaching or training a group over Zoom or Teams or some other online platform, then these tips can really help you increase retention and increase morale. All right, so the first tip is use breakout rooms in your virtual meetings. I use breakout rooms a lot. So Zoom was the first platform to kind of create the breakout rooms, and it was a game changer. They basically invented that right just before the pandemic hit. And it was one of those things that if that had to happen, productivity probably in every area of the world probably would have dropped even more than what it did during the pandemic, because this one little invention kind of changed things pretty dramatically. It's one of the most important tools, really, that for great virtual instructor-led sessions, because after you teach for a while, you can break the meeting up into smaller groups, then give the group specific assignments to increase the application of whatever it was that you were teaching them. For instance, if you're doing a safety training and you cover 10 safety tips, you're going to have the groups rank the tips by importance, and then close down the breakout rooms and have the spokesperson for each group kind of explain their list. I mean, little things like that can really help. If you think about it, all of the tips that you would be giving them in the session are going to be important. However, by getting each group to not only explain the importance of each, but also to defend why that specific safety rule or safety tip is important, every one of those contents, every one of those tips that you're giving them is now being reinforced. They're basically telling each other how important the content is. So it's no longer you presenting the content and saying, hey, you have to follow these things, otherwise you get reprimanded. Now each group is now saying, hey, out of all the things that the tips that you gave us, these are the ones that we find are really, really important. And maybe you find some common ground between some of the different groups. And in other cases, the differences of experience kind of come out, and we start to see that many of these things are way more important than what we gave ourselves credit for, gave credit for them, those things in the beginning. So for instance, when I do leadership development training virtually, I use the breakout rooms to allow the participants to kind of practice the skills that I'm covering. So when I cover how to improve listening skills, for instance, I often break the big group into 3-person breakout rooms. And then I'll have 2 of the 3 participants practice the listening skills that we covered in the session. The third person is just an observer watching what the other 2 people are doing. And then after a short period of time, I'll send instructions to the breakout rooms to change roles and have one of the other 2 people be the observer, and then later switch roles 1 more time so that all 3 of them get a chance to do all 3 roles. By the time we finish, though, that little exercise, the participants have practiced all 3 of the roles of the activity. So when I close down the breakout room and ask for feedback, I tend to get a lot more of it. The virtual breakout room activity creates a valuable area of discussion, because now when they're doing that activity in their breakout room, they start laughing and having a good time. And then when they come out and I say, hey, what happened in your breakout room? And they start to kind of explain, it creates more of a discussion so that more people are now participating, more people are now coming into and voicing their opinion in the meeting. Another way that you can do this, by the way, is tip number two, which is to ask open-ended questions in your instructor-led sessions. So get your audience to participate in the meeting by asking open-ended questions. It's best to ask your audience about their opinion. So by the way, as long as they voice their opinion, they're correct. That's why that's a really good technique to use. Hey, what do you guys think about X? And as long as they answer that question, they're right, you know, because all I asked them was, what do you think about it, right? It could be something really, really as simple as, do you think the idea that I presented will work? Something really, really, I've just told them to do something. I've taught them how to do something a little differently. Hey, do you guys think this might work in the real world? Or an alternative might be, you know, what do you think are the pros and cons of this idea that we just covered? Or if you want to make sure that they give you some, you know, more positive, you might say, hey, what are the advantages do you see if you use this thing, right? So the key here is to stay away from yes or no questions. Remember, we're trying to get the group to talk. So if your group is more shy or introverted, or in some cases just not participating well, you can try using the virtual breakout rooms, basically combined with tip one with tip two, and that could improve the discussion pretty dramatically. So when we deliver virtual instructor-led training with, let's say, 30 participants, a lot of times it may be tough getting a big chunk of those 30 people to actually speak to the entire group. It's a little bit more risky, right? So, but I mean, if you think about it, speaking over Zoom or a Teams call, that can be kind of awkward for many people. So in these situations, I'll have the discussion start in the breakout room. I'll send the participants to a breakout room with 5 to 6 people in each one of the breakout rooms. But before they go, though, I'll send in the chat, I'll send them maybe 3 questions, 4 questions, 5 questions that I want the group to answer in their breakout room. Come to a consensus on what you think the answer to these questions are. And then I'll also have them kind of start by creating a group spokesperson or a team captain or something like that. So basically, when I open up the breakout rooms, the team captains kind of lead the discussion among just their small group. So even the shyest participant is more likely to voice an opinion to a group of 4 or 5 other people than they would to 30 people, right? So I give them a time limit usually, and I'll kind of create a countdown using the breakout room chat to tell, hey, you've got 4 minutes left, you got 3 minutes left, you got 2 minutes left. And then when I close the rooms, I ask each of the captains just to give us a brief report on what was discussed. And then as the team captain starts to talk, I say, hey, anybody else in that breakout room want to kind of add to what your captain is saying? And a lot of times we'll get even some of the shyest people to reiterate some of the things that they discussed in that meeting. Now, if you don't want to use the breakout room as a way to kind of get the discussion going, you can use tip number three, which is to use what I call the think, write, share technique. So if you're presenting to a fairly stoic crowd, you can get them to open up using this technique. So this is typically, by the way, this typically works better than the breakout room discussion if your group is a little smaller. So if you had 10 people or so, think, write, share will typically work better than just sending them to breakout rooms. So this process works just like if you just ask the open-ended question alone. However, a lot of times you'll get more people to participate if you give them a chance to kind of write down their ideas. It's easier for someone to read what they wrote than it is to give you their information off the cuff. So it takes some of the risk out of the process. So let me give you an example of what this might sound like. Let's say that you're trying to get your team to improve an outdated process. So you might start by saying something like, hey, when you think about this process, that's the think part, what are three of the major time wasters in what we are currently doing? So all I'm doing at that point is just kind of getting them to think about the answer to the question. And then immediately after that, or maybe a couple of seconds after I'm kind of looking around the room and kind of see people with looking up in the air to come up with an answer. I said, hey, if we would write down 2 or 3 of the first things that popped into your head when I asked that question. So basically that's the think and the write part. And then I'll kind of wait until people are no longer kind of typing on their computer, or, you know, if I can see them kind of jotting ideas down, I want to make sure that everybody on the Zoom call has written down at least one or two or three things. And then I'll start the discussion by saying, by doing the share part where I say, okay, somebody tell me out of all of the two or three things that you wrote down, what's the most important item that you wrote down? And it works really well. That technique works really, it's like magic to start discussions, because once one person kind of starts, the next one will kind of add to it, and the next one will add to it. And it's a good way to kind of get a lot of different ideas on the table, especially if you're doing any type of problem solving or practical application of something that you've taught them on the virtual call or something like that. Tip number four is you want to give lots of real life examples. So you'll notice that as I've kind of gone through each one of these tips, I've tried to give you at least one example for each one of these. And that's what you want to do in your virtual meetings as well, because the attention span of people today is very, very short. And in virtual meetings, it's even shorter. However, when you get into a good example or a story, the participants take a little mental vacation. They begin to see this mini movie in their heads. And as a result, the meeting becomes way more interesting. For instance, I recently worked with an ex-Secret Service agent who was actually, he was in charge of President Obama's protection detail. And once he retired, he began to get requests from groups who wanted him to come and speak at their meetings. It was like, I mean, it's not like he's a motivational speaker. He's a bureaucrat, really, for that matter. No offense. but you know, basically, that's not real. He's never done kind of public speaking or anything like that. But because of his high profile position, now that he's retired, a lot of groups want him to come out and kind of share some of the things that he kind of saw and some of the excitement that he experienced and that kind of thing. So, and most of the time, these types of meetings requests for him to speak for, 10 minutes or 20 minutes or something like that. It wasn't like a formal kind of keynote speech or anything like that. So I suggested that he just fill the time telling stories about lessons that he learned by interacting with some of the world's most popular leaders. And as I'm kind of making that suggestion to him, all of a sudden I saw his eyes kind of light up, and I asked him what memory he thought about in that moment. And he told me about how he was the only person inside the Oval Office when President Obama met with Nelson Mandela. And when Mandela came to the White House for a visit with the president, and basically at that moment the guy that I was coaching kind of pulled out his cell phone and showed me a selfie that he took with he and President Barack Obama and Nelson Mandela, and I'm like, oh my God, you got to put that up on a slideshow. So basically, the mental movie that he gave me describing that moment took me, and then the actual photograph, by the way, created just this epic moment that he could share to the audiences that he's presenting to. And by the way, your stories don't have to be that epic, by the way. If you're teaching people how a new piece of software can save time, just tell them the story about how time-consuming the process was before we bought the new piece of software. And a lot of times people will groan and go, oh my God, I remember that thing, right? I remember how hard that was. So your virtual audience will stay with you longer. They're going to pay attention to the entire story as you kind of deliver it. And by the way, just like with one of the previous ones, I put a link in the show notes to the 5 steps of storytelling, because that episode will give you a lot of details about how to kind of insert these stories and examples into your training sessions, whether it's virtual or in person. All right. So the last one is really, I think, one of the most critical things that we found when we started doing a lot of these virtual sessions. You want to design shorter sessions and take a break at least every hour or so. And in some cases, it could be 45, 50 minutes. Because the shorter your Zoom training sessions are, the more the audience are going to love them. So if you have a lot of content, basically all you really have to do is take a break every hour or so. It's really easy to do that. All you have to do is just kind of say something like, hey, we've been going for about an hour or so. Let's we're about halfway. Why don't we just take a quick 10-minute break? And most people are going to turn off their cameras and their microphones. However, they're still able to see you, so that when you come back 10 minutes later and you show up on the screen and start talking, the cameras will tend to kind of come back on and everything. I'll give you how we kind of learned the hard way about this, because our in-person training sessions, a lot of times, we're either going to start at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, something like that, for the most part, sometimes 8, but for the most part, it's a a training session typically will last about 3.5 hours in a morning session, take an hour lunch break, and then come back into another 3.5 hours. So for most training sessions, about 7 hours is kind of tops for in person, by the way. Because after an hour or so, we'll take a 10-minute break, and then we'll teach another hour and then take a lunch break and that kind of thing. So basically, 3.5 hours is a pretty good session, and you can go up to an hour and a half without having people kind of trying to hop up to go to the restroom and that kind of thing. However, in the early part of the pandemic, I was the first person to deliver our presentation class virtually. And I tried to use the same structure for the online type of training I just did what I told you guys not to do, the virtual instructor-led training. And I didn't get the best results, because as the Zoom meeting went longer without me giving them a break, more people began to turn their cameras off, which is very difficult. If you're the person speaking and everybody's kind of interacting with you, and all of a sudden cameras start going off left and right, you're like, holy crap, what the heck did I just do? And at that point, it became much harder to keep the energy up on the call. It takes a lot of energy to kind of do this. So eventually we shortened the virtual training sessions to about 50 minutes tops, and then a 10-minute break. So basically, from the time that we start to the time that we send somebody on a break, we spend no more than 50 minutes at a time, and then take a 10-minute break. We get much better results when we kind of do it this way. So a virtual training day ends up being max maybe 3 hours. So come in for 50 minutes, take a 10-minute break, go another 50 minutes, take a 10-minute break, go another 50 minutes. And so now you're at 2 hours and 50 minutes or so that you've been speaking, and then they take a lunch break and do the same thing in the afternoon. So if you're going to be doing a day-long session or a two-day session or something like that, you probably want to kind of max out the virtual training that you do each day to about 6 hours. And even with that, it's exhausting, because even with that shortened time period, when you finish the class or when you finish teaching or training online virtually, you're going to be exhausted. It's one of those things. It takes a tremendous amount of energy to kind of keep the sessions interactive and fun. So basically these little tips that I'm giving you are, it does take more energy to kind of deliver this type of training. It is, but you can get really, really, really good results if you kind of follow this guideline. All right. So basically what we're going to do next week is I'm going to show you a few tips that you can use if you have some of the people, you're actually speaking in person, but you have other people that are on like a Zoom call or a Teams call. And there is one piece of technology that I've found that is phenomenal. It's not the cheapest piece of technology, but you pay for it once and you can kind of use it over and over and over again. But that one thing is something that totally revolutionized the way that I do hybrid type of training. I'll give you that little piece, that nugget of wealth when we come back next week. So we'll see you next week on the Fearless Presentations Podcast. Bye, y'all.
Subscribe to this podcast for new public speaking secrets each week.